Welcome to the Best People We Know radio show. This is where you'll meet experts and celebrities who share their success secrets with you to help you be your most successful best too. Your host, Deb Scott, is a certified professional coach at Discover the Amazing You Coaching and author of the award-winning motivational book, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up. The Best People We Know radio show brings you powerful resources, effective ideas, and transformational tools you can use to educate, inspire, and motivate you to be your most purposeful, peaceful, happy best. So get ready to experience mind vitamins to feed your whole soul. Good change is about to happen. The Best People We Know radio show. Here's your host, Deb Scott.
Well, happy Valentine's Day to all the best people I know. Are you feeling the love throughout the airwaves? Whoa. I tell you, today's the day. Plant kindness, grow love. Make sure that you remember your family, friends, loved ones, hubbies, wives, all those great special people. Say, I love you. There's never enough love. The world needs you to share your shine. So, hey, if you're loving the idea of publishing your book, you're going to love today's show and our guest, because we have Robin Sullivan with us, and she's president of Redan Publishing. And she'll be taking your calls if you're interested, if you had this burning question about getting your book published or, you know, what route to take, anything like that. 347-637-1318. 347-637-1318. Press #1. That'll put you through. Line up in the switchboard. And I also want to remind you, you can get a listing of the entire month's guests by going to my website, greenskyandbluegrass.com, and just signing up for the Mind Vitamin newsletter. You can also go to motivationmarathon.com and get a lot of updates there. We had a great, great tour on those speakers, and you can just go check it out. There's a lot of great free resources and things that we're doing. So stay informed, helping you be your best. All right, well, let's talk about today's topic with Robin Sullivan. She's founder and president of Redan Publishing, which is an indie press that specializes in speculative fiction. Her authors include debut new authors such as Nathan Lowell, Marsh Thomas, Leslie Ann Moore, as well as industry giants such as Joe Haldeman, New York Times bestselling author A.C. Crispin, and just the list goes on. You really want to go to her website, which is, let's see, I have it there in the BTR page, but it's redanpublishing.com, and you can just get a list for the depth and breadth of the work that Robin does. Her publishing career started by releasing her husband's book, Raya Revelations, and that became a self-publishing phenomenon. That book sold more than 70,000 copies. Wow, that's great. Before being signed for a big six-figure publishing contract with the Hatchett Book Group. She's also a well-known public speaker on publishing and marketing, and she maintains a very highly active publishing blog Write to Publish, and that's Write with the number 2 publish.com. You can go there. She has a great book by the same title, and that offers you insights in the publishing industry, marketing tips, advice on, you know, the best side of writing, and so much more, and you're going to learn everything you need to know today and make a new friend in Robin who's going to help you get that book out into the world. It is a pleasure and privilege to have you with us today, Robin. Thanks for joining us. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, I'm really excited about your topic, and I know we've spoken a while, and a lot of people have been writing in and have questions, so I'm looking forward to this, but I would love if you could just set the tone with listeners in telling them about the publishing industry, because it is going through tremendous changes, and these changes affect what authors need to do to be successful who want to get their book out today. Can you set the stage for the environment that we're all living in right now?
Sure. So I really think that right now is the best time ever to be involved with publishing. Used to be, even as few as, I would say, maybe 5 years ago, the only way to make any substantial money was to be through a Big Six publisher. everyone else. Yeah, there was self-publishing. Yeah, there were small presses, but most of those people weren't making money you could live off of. What's happened is that with new technologies such as print-on-demand and the ebook revolution, the playing field has now gotten a lot more even. And so what used to happen was when Big Six Publishing was all there were only a few slots that were available in any given year. You know, they could only bring out a couple of hundred books, and, you know, it wasn't a matter of your book wasn't good, it was a matter of someone else's book was better. So now that we have these small presses, like my small press does very well. I've written, royalty checks to authors for $68,000 for a single quarter.
For a single quarter, yeah. Wow.
And that kind of thing would have been unheard of, like I said, 5 years ago. And then also the self-publishers have done very well. My husband, as you mentioned, was published through my company, and he made six figures in self-publishing in just 4 months. So it's, and I go to these conferences, and people say to me, well, self-publishing has always been around, so nothing's really changed. Well, it's true, it has always been around, but the difference is now there's a distribution medium. E-books, from a standpoint of even playing field, a book published by a Big Six really doesn't have any more or any less leverage than a book published by an independent publisher or a small press publisher. And now we have many more slots. So when they used to be just those few slots that could be filled, now we have, hundreds and thousands of them. And because of this, I know, gosh, I can't even imagine, hundreds easily of authors who are making 5- and 6-digit figures, which they never could have done, even as little as 2 years ago.
Unbelievable. And, some of those numbers that you're talking about, for those of you listening, those are solid numbers. You can make a living doing this. And clearly, I think the question becomes, well, obviously, you're successful, and what you're doing is obviously working. Tell us about that and what that is, and maybe some of those advantages and disadvantages. I think you already have led into the advantages and disadvantages in various publishing options. But I'm sure listeners want to know, wow, Robin, I'm blown away by these statistics and the amount of money your authors are making. What are you doing? What are you doing? How are you making that happen?
Well, so there's really two main ingredients. The first is, and it's been said a million times before, but it can't be emphasized enough, is you have to have a really good book. If you don't have a good book, there's absolutely nothing you can do. And Ryden is very, very particular about the titles we choose. As you mentioned before, that we operate in something called speculative fiction, which means science fiction, fantasy, and horror. And we know how to market those particular books to a specific audience. So we're very picky about who we choose in the first place. Once you have the good book, and to me that's really where most people really fall down. I look at tens of thousands of submissions that come into Ryden, and none of them are at a level that I would be willing to publish at. But once you have that really good book, then you need to get it noticed and get people to hear about it. Once you do that, you start getting word of mouth, and word of mouth is the only thing that will sell books. So what you need to do is get, my job for my authors is get the pump primed, get it in front of enough people so that they will fall in love with it and start recommending it to others. And in today's world, there are all kinds of avenues for doing this. There are shows like this. There are many people who are interviewed on shows like yours and other blog talk radio shows. There are podcasts where people are talking about books. There are book blogs where reviews are being done. There are sites like Goodreads, totally dedicated to books, and millions of people every day are on Goodreads, and they're talking about books, and they're interacting with books. So it's much easier nowadays to find an audience because they're right there. Now, it does take a lot of elbow grease, and it does take a lot of doing things the right way. But if you have that good product, it will grow on its own. The problem is that somebody tries to push a substandard product. And what happens there is you're more or less, in the beginning, hand-selling almost every single book that you get out there. You're having a personal interaction with someone. And because the book's not that good, it's not getting that word of mouth. And so you'll constantly be kind of fighting this, you know, onesie type sales model. But if you have that good book, and here's the important aspect, too, is make sure that you're targeting it to the right people who would enjoy that book. Then what it'll do is it'll grow organically on its own, and you just got to kind of get that pumped, primed, and then it'll go out the door.
Well, those are all so, I mean, you've just hit on so many powerful pearls there, and I thank you for these golden nuggets, which is why it's such a pleasure having you on the show. I was just wondering, when you say enough, getting enough word of mouth out there, could you just quantify that a little bit more as enough, you know, 10 people, 100 people, 500 people? I mean, what do you usually see is required? A number of reviews or number of people who have read it in that niche market of interest to really get that good platform so that if it is a good quality product, it has been read by these number of people, then, you know, typically you would start to expand that word of mouth opportunity in a positive way.
So that's going to depend on one major factor, and that is price. In the world of small press and self-publishing, there tends to be two pricing models. What I call the low pricing model, which is generally people are pricing their books at 99 cents or $2.99. Then there's what I'll call the professional model, where you're charging your books more like around $4.95 to $9.99. In that really small number, if you're in that 99, $2.99, you have to sell thousands of books. And the reason why I say that is a large amount of those books will never get read. A lot of the people, a lot of very voracious ebook readers, will see something that they've heard about, they're mildly interested in, and when it comes off as a sale price, they'll snatch it up, and it just sits on their readers. So it's really hard when you have a book that's down in that low price point whether you're going to actually convert that to a reader or if it's just a sale. I'm not interested in sales, I'm interested in readers. So if you look at the write-in publishing model, all of our books are priced $4.95 to $6.95. And this is more in line with the books that are being published by the big presses that generally run around $7.99 to $12.99. So we're a little bit cheaper than them because I want to offer a good deal. But I'm not so cheap as to, you know, I know that when someone purchases one of those books, they'll read it. So the first thing is making sure that you're targeting an audience where you're getting readers. Now, if you're talking about that higher price point, you can really prime that pump with really just a few hundred sales. But the other component of this that I didn't mention that I probably should, in fantasy and science fiction, which is what I write or what my authors write, we're big on series, and write-in is very attracted to series. So what happens is we try to keep the books coming out at a regular interval, and those sales usually do not take off with one book. Some people do. There are some people who have had huge success with one book. But usually I'd say it takes about three in a series, and when you get to like the third book in the series, that's where people really get interested and they start reading all the previous books, and then they feed off of one another.
It's interesting because on your website you have, which I'm encouraging everybody to go to your website, it's really well done and it gives people some great insight to echo a lot of the points you're making, but you say in signing A.C. Crispin, the New York Times bestselling author, it signed seven books with
yes.
you. So again, you're talking about, for this particular genre, that attraction to having, you know, a series of books versus maybe some other genres just having one or two follow-up or something like that.
Yeah, and the reality is just about any genre you can do multiple books on. I mean, if you go to literary fiction, you know, we had John Updike, and he had Rabbit at Rest and Rabbit Run, and, you know, he did a whole series of those. And in mysteries and thrillers, there'll usually be a series of books that are centered around a particular detective, like Janet Ivanovich's books or Things Done by Patterson. So it doesn't have to be just, well, and certainly in romance. Romance is one where they'll have, you know, a character that's followed for several books, or they'll have books all themed in one particular geographic or time period, like a whole bunch of books related to, you know, Victorian England or something of that nature. So yeah, it's always easier, and the people who write quickly and write more than one books will always outperform those that only do one.
Okay, so if you're thinking, if you've just written your one book, you better start thinking about 2, 3, and 4 that series.
Yeah.
So, you know, you gotta really think bigger than just the one book, which is, I think, a great piece of advice. When you know, I just wanted to get back to this. You're talking, you know, having a good quality product, and then, of course, making sure that you get it out there, a few hundred people reading it, to make sure that you can do that word of mouth, making sure that it's targeted. And I appreciate what you're saying about the $4.95, $6.95, and some of those statistics are very valuable for listeners. You know, what happens then? I mean, a lot of these, I know I see them frequently. You know, we're doing your Amazon bestseller book campaign, and everybody does JV partnerships, and, you know, they get all these endorsements, and then they, you know, do some other things where they're promoting books with other authors and so forth. Would you like to speak to that? Because I think that that's an issue that people are dealing with, or feel like, if I don't have one of these JV partnerships, if I don't have something like that, if I'm doing that indie press publishing, I'm never gonna be successful. So, what do you say to that person?
So, it depends on who you partner with and why. You know, it makes a lot of sense to me if you have a book and you know other indie authors who write very similar to you. For instance, I'll give you an example. Nathan Lowell writes science fiction, and he doesn't write very hard science fiction. It's actually more like regular fiction, but it happens to be set in a science fiction setting. So for him to gather up with some other like-minded science fiction people and to work a you know, to try and do some cross-selling with them. Hey, if you like Nathan's book, you'll also like my book. I think that makes a lot of sense. Sometimes, though, you'll run across organizations that are just kind of generalists, and they'll just kind of take any book and kind of lump it together with any other book. And I don't see where that's going to provide any benefit, because the real trick here, again, is finding that target audience. And here's a trick I'll tell your readers, which I highly recommend no matter how you're published, and that is, if you go to your Amazon page for a book and you click through to where it says the author's page, on the right-hand side of the author's page will be 16 other authors that will be listed. And it'll say something like customers also bought. And these 16 authors are ones that Amazon has crunched the numbers together and says, you know, not only does this person buy, you know, books by Michael Sullivan, they also buy books by Brandon Sanderson and Patrick Rothfuss and Joe Abercrombie and on and on and on and on. And actually what you can do is you can actually kind of follow like a little trail, and you can see how many of these authors you tend to fall on their cross-selling list for. Well, right there, you have a really great audience. You know exactly who works well with. So if it's, let's say it's a smaller mid-list author, okay, it would make a lot of sense for me to approach someone like John Sprunk, who is on that cross-selling, and say, hey, John, I know a lot of your fans like my book, or like Michael's book, and a lot of Michael's fans like your book. You know, why don't we guest post on each other's blogs? Or why don't we see if we can do a show together? Or maybe we can do a promotion where we can offer both books at a discount. So as long as you're operating in kind of your own in books that readers are looking at them as making those connections, then I think there's tremendous value. But if you're just kind of doing it on what I'll call kind of a shotgun approach, where you're just kind of like putting it out there without any methodology behind it, I think you're going to spend quite a bit of time and effort and not get a lot of results for it.
Fascinating. And that's a great tip about the Amazon authors page, you know, seeing where else they list. It's like Twitter. They'll say, similar to you, you know, in the right column.
Right.
And you're like, oh, and you find out where you listed and all these things. And it's That's interesting. I never knew somebody had me in this list, or you don't think of yourself that way, but it is important to know. And niche specific. I hear you repeating that again and again and again. How about somebody, let's talk about ebooks and Borders and Barnes and Nobles and all of that, because obviously you're talking about ebooks and people are buying them now, and then a lot of regular mainstream bookstores are closing down. Maybe this ties into it's a great time to get your book out there and publish in an indie way. What do you want listeners to know about this current situation?
So I follow the statistics that are put out by the AAP, that's the Association of American Publishers, and every month they list for trade books, and trade books being books that are sold through bookstores, what the various sales figures are, and they'll say, you know, hardback sales are this amount, and mass market paperback is this much, and trade paperback are this much, and then ebooks are another number. And unfortunately, that doesn't tell the full picture because it's only reporting on the people who report to the AAP, and so that's kind of a small percentage. But one of the things you'll see over and over and over again in the 2 years that I've been tracking it, hardcover sales continually fall in the percentage of sales that come from hardcover. Mass market paperback holds up a little bit better. I would say more on a flat standpoint than a you know, complete nosedive. But ebooks, every single time a new report comes out, you know, they're coming in at, you know, several hundred percent increases. So there's a lot of argument over, you know, what percentage of the market really is ebooks and what is paperback books. And sometimes you heard, you know, 3%, sometimes you hear 8%, you know, sometimes you hear 20%. But if you look at, like, the USA Today list, the USA Today list lists the top 100 books, and they always list on there which edition of the book sold the most in that week. So they'll say, there'll be a little H for a hardcover, there'll be a little P for a paperback, or an E for electronic. And if you looked, you know, in January, the vast majority of those books, 43 of them were ebooks, and then I think there was like 15 or 20 hardbacks, and the rest were paperback. And if you look at the top, if you look at the top 20, the top 20 books, like 18 of them were electronic books.
So 18,
really? 20. It was the
wow.
ebook.
Wow.
And these are the biggest books in the nation. These are the Stieg Larssons and the, you know, the Hunger Games and, you know, the really top selling books. And that's empirical proof that the ebooks are selling more than the print books. Now, this changes very quickly. The real watershed moment for me was in November of 2010. Prior to that, my husband had 4 books out in his series, and he was selling modestly well at 1,000 books a month. When November happened, and from November, December, January, and February, he sold more than 10,000 books each month. His highest selling number was 11,500 books. Later
wow.
on, well, later on, my author, Marshall Thomas, he sold 19,500 books in the month of May. 19,500 books in 1 month. So the numbers have just really exploded. And still mostly,
Robin, you're still seeing that trend in your own publishing company with the ebooks as well?
Yeah. Well. For me, I'm always going to sell more ebooks than print books because a small press like Ryden really doesn't have the bookstore presence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my husband has subsequently gone on to Big Six Publishing, and now his books are in every store in the country. And I don't have numbers from Hachette yet to really tell you like what the percentages were. I did get some preliminary numbers just the other day, and I kind of crunched them through, and he's running. Depending on the title of the book, he has 3 books out. The lowest one is 45% ebook, and the highest one is 55% ebook. Now he has kind of a big following in ebook, so that might be, you know, his numbers might be a little bit higher than, like, you know, average people. But that's what I'm seeing. But the bookstores more and more are becoming kind of the showrooms for books. You know, people go there, they'll browse, they'll flip through the pages and so forth. Then they're going to come home and they're going to buy either the print book from Amazon or they're going to buy the e-book for their readers. So they're not, you know, they're really struggling. Now, I saw some news recently where Barnes & Noble is spinning off their Nook business from Barnes & Noble, so it will be a completely separate entity. And to be honest, I think that's being done as a precursor for Barnes & Noble going the way of Borders. I think it's really hard for them to maintain that retail space with everyone buying online. And so what I think they're going to do is they're going to make that a separate entity so that if they were to have to either go into a chapter 7 or chapter 11, that asset will be separate and they can keep that going even after the print books go. So I would not, you know, people say, well, print books aren't going to go away, and they're not. There will always be people reading print books. But I think that they will start to be the subsidiary right. I think the majority of the people will be making their money through e-books, just like a lot of the money made in music today is done through downloads and not so much with CD sales. And I think that, print books will always be there, but the majority of the money going forward will be in the e-book space.
No doubt. I really cannot. I know that people have to be, and thanks everybody for being in the chat room. We have some of our regulars in there and guests, and I really appreciate everybody. If you had a question for Robin, just dial 347-637-1318, or you can type it there in the chat room. But, you know, some of the information you're providing, especially the statistics, going towards e-books and the success of that and the financial gain. I mean, you're talking, when you're writing out checks for $60,000, I mean, people can make a living if they do the right thing, which you're so good at. I think we had, it was last year, I can't remember what month, but we had met through Jane Friedman. And she was talking, again, you know, who for Writer's Digest and so forth, and she was talking about e-books. And now we're seeing this playing out, and I think you're probably, you know, having that premonition with Barnes & Noble for a good reason. You know, tying this all together, somebody right now has a book. Maybe they've printed a book. Maybe they're getting ready to get their book published, believing it's the great quality you say everybody has to have to start out. You know, what is this author, what's your advice for them besides getting in touch with you? And if you could give your contact information, that would be great. But, you know, everybody wants to be their best, you know, have their book take off. Any final words? And, again, all of your contact information if you could.
Sure. Well, you know, if you're writing a book nowadays, it makes, you know, absolutely zero sense not to have an electronic book version of that. And at a very minimum, you have to be on Amazon. And it is exceedingly easy to be on Amazon. When I started this, I had no idea what it took to make an ebook. And, you know, I got on the internet and I just started searching around. And there are all kinds of free resources. It is so easy to make an ebook. It uses something called HTML, which are these little, it's just a flat text file with these little codes that say things like, you know, bold this or make this italics or make this a separate paragraph. And it's real, real simple to do. Once you have, you know, kind of that basic ebook, that ebook that's made through these little HTML things, and by the way, you know, you can get it for free on the internet or you can just type in to Amazon, you know, say ebook formatting, and you'll find, gosh, I don't know, 3 dozen books, you know, for like 99 cents to $2.99 that will take you through it. And anyone can convert a book from manuscript to ebook in about an hour and a half. That's all the time it takes. So, you know, don't go out there spending, you know, $1,000 for someone to do it for you because you don't need it. Okay. And then, of course, the publishing tools for Amazon are really simple. They're free. It doesn't cost you anything to put an ebook out there. You just fill in some forms and then you upload your file and you're done. Once you get the Kindle version made, I would say there are programs, and I never know how to pronounce this program, so I'm going to butcher this, so I apologize. It's either called Calibre or Calibre. It's C-A-L-I-B-R-E. And it's free software, and what you can do is you can feed it a book of one format, and it will spit out a book of all kinds of other formats. So it will make a file format like that's called EPUB, which is what Barnes & Noble's use for the Nook, and it will make a .mobi file, which is what people use on smartphones, and it will make a LRF, which is something that's used for the Sony e-reader. So you can make all these different versions with just a touch of a button, and then uploading it to Barnes & Noble is just as easy as it is for Kindle. It's free. You fill out some forms, you put the file in, and then it goes up. So you have to have an ebook out there. There's absolutely no reason not to have one. And you know, that's probably, you know, the biggest mistake people make, because they're so used to print books. Okay. As far as contact information, the best way to contact me, there's a couple things. One is, as you already mentioned, I have this blog, and this blog is called Write to Publish, and that's WRITE2Publish .blogspot.com. Or if you just type Write to Publish with that 2 in there, you'll find me. I'm pretty search engine optimization friendly, so it's really easy to find me. But on that blog, I really am covering publishing from all different sides, from self-publishing to Big Six publishing to finding an agent to marketing your books, you know, just anything related to the business side of writing. I'm also on Twitter. You can get me there at rsullivan9597. And then, of course, in Write and Publishing, that's another site where, obviously, I have all my books for sale. But as far as, you know, advice and things of that nature, the biggest place to go is the Write to Publish.
And that's a great blog, and you keep that updated. So lovely, and I really enjoy that content and find it so valuable. We have a couple of questions, if I can take another minute with you here. We have a question from Candy O'Donnell in the chat room. She actually has a radio show, Candy O'Donnell, and she's written some books. And we have another question from Design Thumb, who I know just has a novel coming out. So let's see. One of the questions from Candy is talking about the e-books being so hot right now, but talking about what it's going to actually take to make money on those e-books. And Design Thumb is saying that he's planning to use Lightning Source to print and distribute his novel, and was wondering if you had any opinion on Lightning Source.
Yeah, so Lightning Source is a fabulous organization. I use them myself for print books. In the print-on-demand space, there's really two big players. One is CreateSpace, and one is Lightning Source. Now, here's something I'm going to tell you guys to do, which is going to sound kind of odd. I'm going to tell you to use both. And that might not make a lot of sense initially, but let me cover it really quickly, and it will. CreateSpace has the lowest per-cost book charges. Their per book fee is very inexpensive. It's basically 0.012 cents per the number of pages plus an 85 cents for the cover. So a 300 page book will cost you about $3 when done through CreateSpace. And so if you're having books that you're selling directly at an event, or if you're selling directly via your website, I want you to use CreateSpace and buy all your books from there, because it's the cheapest way you can get your books, even in very small quantities. You can buy 5 books. You can buy 1 book. You can buy 20 books really, really cost effectively. Lightning Source uses the exact same technology as CreateSpace. The books look exactly the same. You won't be able to tell the difference between them. But the big difference is when you publish through CreateSpace, and if you were to put that book for sale on Amazon, they're going to take 40% off the top as their distribution fee. When you're on Lightning Source, you get to choose the distribution fee, and you can make that as small as 20%. So what I suggest is you do just that. You use Lightning Source for distributing it through Amazon and through bookstores and things of this nature, and you set that royalty rate down really low. You set it to 20%, and that's going to allow you to put that extra 20% in your pocket.
Wow.
Now, at that rate, you will not get a lot of bookstore buy-in. Bookstores generally need a 50% discount before they'll carry your book. But I used to have my books on Lightning Source at 50%, and I used to have, and then later on I put it to 20%, and I sold about the same number of books either way. So
fascinating statistics. Boy, I tell you what, you people listening to this show, you're really, I tell you, this is a big blessing to have Robin telling us this information. This is really, I mean, this is amazing, amazing stuff that you're sharing with us.
Well, it's stuff that is taken, you know, that I'm constantly learning and adapting and keeping up to date with things. And if it just goes in my head and doesn't go anywhere else, what good is it? If I can spread this around and if other people can benefit from it, then I'm very happy to do so. So that's why I do things like, you know, my blog. I also do lectures in the Washington, D.C. area where I talk about these types of things. So, you know, it's really good for spreading that out. But I forgot what the first question was. It had something to do about
Google. So for design thumb, there you go. There's a good answer. So create space, lightning source, use both, and that 20% with lightning source. Hey, why not? That sounds great. So you're on the right track, design thumb. And Candy was talking about ebooks, to make money with the ebooks. I don't know if that's a question as far as what to sell them at, or maybe gets back to the promotion. She's just talking about, I think the first thing to know, Candy, is that you can definitely make a lot of money with ebooks and make a living. I think that's what it's about. But do you want to just talk
to
that?
A couple things I can say. Number one is ebooks, depending on how you do it, have zero investment. I mean zero, because like with Lightning Source and CreateSpace, they have a very minor setup fee. I think with CreateSpace it's like $39, and Lightning Source I think it's like $37.50 or something like that. So they're very inexpensive setup fees, but you do have those setup fees. Ebooks, when you put things out on Kindle and when you put things out on Barnes & Noble, there is no fee at all. They are only taking money as they're cut. So, you know, it's really interesting because in the book business, I often liken it to venture capitalists. And by that I mean is you have these organizations who have to invest huge sums of money, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to get the book up there. And 5 out of 6 of them will fail. So they're making all their money on that one that succeeds. And therefore, the ones that fail, they kind of have, you know, the one that succeeds is kind of carrying the boat for those ones that fail. But in the ebook world, any book you put out there, even if it only sells 5 copies, it's made positive ROI. It's you're not in the negative. Okay,
mm-hmm.
you're always in the positive. Now the only caveat I'll put to that is I happen to have a very talented author husband who is also an artist, so he's made my covers, so I don't have to pay anything for covers. And some covers can be made by anyone very inexpensively. Some of the best covers I've seen were obviously self-made by people. Where they did not have to pay someone else to make them. But in general, I think it's worth doing an investment to have a professionally made cover, and that can run as little as $125, maybe as much as $350. So that's a case where you are starting from the negative, but we're not talking huge sums of money. I'm not talking about going out and investing, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 in order to get started. Mm-hmm. If you can't make back, you know, $150, you know, selling ebooks, then you're doing something very wrong. The trick here is keep your costs manageable so that it's easy to make a positive ROI. I'm a very big proponent of, you know, like I was doing a lecture one day here in Washington, D.C., and this person said she just signed, she's a new author, and she just signed with a publishing person. And I went, ouch, how much did that run you? And she says, oh, it wasn't very much. It was, you know, $13,000. And I'm like, oh, my God, $13,000. I says, you know how that PR company is going to, you know, if they wanted to make any money, they would just buy a bunch of your books with your money, you know, to show a positive return for you. I said, you're never going to make back $13,000, anything very quickly. So, you know, the real trick in all of this is to keep your costs low so that it's easy to be profitable. If you run up too large of a bill to begin with, then you'll be struggling.
And it's interesting what you're saying about having the husband that does all the cover design for you because he's an artist. But, you know, that's something else that goes into, I mean, people want a good cover for their book. I mean, that's part of what helps to sell the book as well. So it is important to factor in all of these things. Now, I'm going to ask you a question that nobody's asked, but I think somebody is probably thinking it, or at least will on the replay when they download it on iTunes. What about somebody who went with an indie publishing company and they were not really happy with the profit margin? What can they do? Do they have to have a new edition for their book, get a new ISBN number to switch it to something like CreateSpace or Lightning Source? What do you tell somebody who said, you know, I've got a book out there, it's doing okay, but I don't really like the profit margins and the indie publisher's making all the money and I want to do a little bit more on my own?
Right. So that's why it's very, very important for you to evaluate your contract right off the get-go, and also be looking for under what rights will it revert. Unfortunately, most contracts, especially contracts from big publishers, are written for the term life of the copyright, which means basically they have it until you die and then 70 years after you die.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, usually it doesn't stick that way, because what generally happens is that the books will become in the old days, what happened is they would go out of print. They would print up a couple of, you know, several thousand books, and once they sold, they would get to a decision to either reprint it or have it go out of print. And if it went out of print, then your rights reverted to you, and then you could do whatever you want with it. And I'll tell you in just a moment what you would do. But in today's world, because of e-books, it's quite possible that your books will never go out of print. So you have to be very careful with how those reversion aspects are written in your contract. For instance, with the very first contract my husband did with a small press, the way it was worded, as long as there was an e-book there, the book was still, quote-unquote, in print. And I went, no. You know, you have to have physical books, real honest print books, in order for it to still be in print. And if you sell out all of those and don't reprint it, then the rights revert. And it was a good thing I had done that, because, in fact, he did sell out the printing on his first book, and we got that back. And so we were able to sell that, well, A, self-publish it, and then B, sell it to Hachette later. In Ryden, we're very, very unusual in the respects that we're so confident in our ability of what we do with our authors. We actually let them leave anytime they want to.
Mm.
And I'm telling you, there's no other publisher in the world that I know does this.
That's because you are the best, because we have the best people we know. We have Robin Sullivan. That's what it is to be on this radio show. You got to be rocking the world out there.
That's right.
That's awesome. I'm telling you. So really, there's so much more. I mean, we're running out of time right now. We've only got like 3 minutes left on the show. And there's just so much. We'll have to have you come back. I hope you will.
Sure.
To give us more of an update. But what a jewel. I mean, you just have so much information, and people are thanking you, singing your praises in the chat room. And I just, again, let people know how to get in touch with you. And really, the hope and the inspiration and the depth of knowledge and the facts and figures. I mean, you have a tremendously successful business. You run it with integrity. You have great enthusiasm. You know what you're doing. And you just are a jewel. We just can't thank you enough for being on the show. So let people know how to get in touch with you again.
Sure. For people who are interested in buying Ryden books, and of course I want you to support all those great authors that I produce, that would be Ryden Publishing, www.ridanpublishing.com. For those who are interested in learning about the business side of writing, that would be the Write to Publish blogs, the blog, and that's WRITE, the number 2, and the word publish, and that's at blogspot.com. On Twitter, you can find me at rsullivan9597, and my email address is robin.sullivan.dc, as in District of Columbia, at gmail.com.
Wow. All right. Well, you are a jewel in the crown of the publishing world. So people, get in touch with Robin, support her authors. You have more questions, if they let them know that they were listening to you on the Best People We Know show or something, maybe that will help a little bit, to flag it or something. But really, your message, your final word, the word of the day for somebody who has a book in them that wants to get it out, it's doable. You can make money with it, and you can have fun, and it's a great time to get your book out into the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's never been a better time to be in writing.
All right. Well, everybody, I know you've enjoyed the show as much as I have. We're all going to listen to this on replay, because there's a lot of pearls of wisdom here. So make sure you download us on iTunes, give the show a rating, go to greenskyandbluegrass.com to sign up for that Mind Vitamin newsletter to see the new people that we have coming up next week and the week after. And we are dedicated to helping you be your best. So in the famous words of Oscar Wilde, I want to close with, be yourself, because everybody else is already taken. Thanks for being part of our listening audience. We love you. God bless. Make it a great day. And thank you, Robin. You've been awesome to be with us.
Thank you for listening to the Best People We Know radio show with your host, Deb Scott. For more on Deb and her guests, plus her award-winning guidebook to transformation, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up, go to Deb's website, greenskyandbluegrass.com. You can also connect with Deb for coaching or speaking, and sign up for Deb's free Mind Vitamin newsletter while you're there. So now, you're one step closer today to your greatness. We look forward to being with you next time on the Best People We Know radio show.
Hello?